Paldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Paranormal,
ghosts,
spirits,
demons,
reincarnation,
past lives,
the afterlife,
divination,
exorcisms,
witchcraft,
the unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Furman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Is reality. The connection is you. Check out Catherine Buckley on Truth Connections Radio, Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 107.7 FM, the Paranormal Radio Network.
Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Excuse me, I'm looking for your lowest priced unlimited plan.
Walmart Family Mobile is only $39.88 a month.
With unlimited talk, text, and web.
Oh, wow, great deal. Mm-hmm. I just got to figure out which one of these phones I want.
Well, this one says I'm all over what's trending, and this one says I'm so advanced, I'm like actually from the future.
And they both say, I'm Mr. Savings.
Great. Glad I could help.
Get Walmart Family Mobile, our lowest priced unlimited plans, and pick up the Concord smartphone on rollback today for just $49.88. Walmart.
Savvy, but they were always trying to hack our system, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, they actually bumped me up. I mean, they took me off of the line, and they actually put me on quality control because, you know, they liked what I was doing. And, yeah, then I got the keys to be able to listen to everybody. And, yeah. Oh, my God, you would not believe – you probably would believe some of the –
Dude, we had guys that were doing, like, 80 calls, you know, a day. And we're like, wait a minute, something's up. First of all – this guy's not that good. And, you know, it just didn't make any sense. He wasn't having any parts come back, and, you know, everything was just perfect. And come to find out, these guys would, somebody would call up or drop in their queue because they didn't have a phone. Everything was gated, you know, at the telecom level. So, they would send calls, and the calls would drop in a queue, and the person that he would hear in their headphones, they'd hear like a beep, beep, and there would be the person. I mean, they couldn't even call people back, but they had a mute button, and they would just hit their mute button, and the customer would be like, hello, 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 you know, after sitting on hold for an hour and a half, two hours, and then they just hang up. Next person dropped in, and that's what they did all day. And they would just pretend to talk. It was unbelievable, the stuff that they guys did.
Oh, I have seen that level of confidence. Now, one of the things that made me actually crack up laughing, because, you know, at T-Mobile, everybody had to follow the script, you know, while you were waiting for the system to get its thing done, make small talk and conversation. You know, and you know, they were just like, you know, use their address, ask them how the weather is wherever they're at. And this one idiot, I happened to be listening in on him, and he's like, well, hi. I mean, I hope you're having a good day down there in GA. And I was like, what? This idiot does not even know what the abbreviation for Georgia is? I mean, like you said, that's the level of competence that a lot of these companies have to deal with. And I can definitely see why you have to, you know, ride herd on, well,
I would literally go, I would be walking down the hallway. Now, this is like a huge, gutted grocery store, like a Mega Mart or a huge Walmart.
Oh, yeah, they love to, like, all the strip malls that become abandoned, these guys love those things.
Yeah, they just move in. And, you know, I would be walking down the hall and past a project, and I would see something get shrunk down really quick on someone's screen. It was perfectly in my job description to go excuse that person and go see what they're looking at. And if it was something non-work related, I would just tell them, dude, get your stuff. I'd tell a supervisor, I'd just point and I would do like the slit throat thing. You know, and they would be like, no!
I'd be like, oh. Like handing a loaded gun to customers when you just give them like unfettered internet access. No, they're not going to work.
Yeah,
crazy. Me and Joe were running a network at the Turo Infirmary. I mean, we had an entire floor that was basically ours. We threw a little gigabit network from, I mean, they were just running Windows XP systems. It wasn't anything really technically that hard. And, well, I mean, just going through people's browser histories, you would be surprised what they find. Like, you know, that one guy that has a thing for really big girls.
Oh, we would find scat videos, you know, people searching for scat. I'm like, dude, you're in a bay with, like, you know, 16 other people, and you're watching people taking craps on other people? Dude, what are you doing?
Oh, man, could you imagine, like, going over Stan Romanek's computer if he worked at a day job?
Oh, that was so funny. You know, and all these people are like, oh, you know, the NSA and CIA, and they put that stuff on Stan's computer because he's telling the truth. You know, and like I said on our last show, you know, Stan is nobody. He's nobody. You know what I mean? I mean, he's nobody. There's, you know, he makes a video with a Muppet. You know, and
hey, but his homeboy said you need $50,000 to reproduce that video.
Whatever, man. Whatever. You know, and then Stan's like, who is homeboy? Peckman?
I forget which one. Yeah, right. You know, I mean,
Peckman's the one that went on Letterman with it. Anyway, he described the alien running away, and he, you know, described the aliens from the movie The Arrival to a T. You know, and I'm like, Stan. Dude, you know, and he's been caught so many times, you know, from people. And, you know, I caught Lisa in a lie, and just all I got to do is lie once to me. And that's it.
Well, I think this is like a pretty damning thing for the entire field of ufology. It's like, look, this guy, like you said, this guy was an obvious bullshit artist, a complete and total hoaxer, and a faker. Even before he got caught with kiddie porn.
Oh, yeah, yeah. For years. For as long as I can remember.
me and Joe and other Sasha, other people in the iCar, I mean, we never bought that. I mean, we're the actual reason.
Nobody worth their ilk bought any of that.
People like us, we've talked to literally hundreds of contactees out there, each and every one of us. And the nicest thing I can say about Romanek's whole saga is that it's unique to him. That's as nice as I can possibly be to him.
Right.
It doesn't fit any kind of criteria. I mean, it's not, I mean, come on. I mean, he's an obvious faker. Aliens don't do little parlor tricks and hokey, showy shit like that. I mean, that's
for nobody.
They roll. And it's incredibly damning that the entire field of ufology got taken over by this guy. So they're like, well, he's getting kind of popular. Hell yeah, I'll stand next to him on a podium and, you know, give him my thumbs up and, you know, my personal recommendation. I advocate this guy. He's this poster boy for alien abductees. No, alien abductees and genuine researchers, we're not the assholes that made this asshole the poster.
They're hiding under their beds.
Field, you know?
You know what I mean? I mean, actual people who are dealing with this phenomena aren't running around going, yay, look at me, I'm an abduction, attention whore.
No,
nobody's doing that.
One genuine contactee that actually likes this guy. Not one single one. They're like, this guy's making a mockery. And like you said, I mean, this is a lifelong process that people go through. It's some real shit that they have to deal with. It's not some hokey, showy, oh, look at my video. And I mean, like, well, we're trying to get a hold of Sasha still. It's apparently not working. But, I mean, come on. This guy said he was an alien named Audrey and was talking to Sasha on Skype. I mean,
yeah, I'm just like, yeah, there's all this things going on in the world that they could be helping with. And they are talking to Sasha on Skype saying what an awesome dude Stan Romanek is and how he's going to save the world, you know, and all this crap. Listen. True belief. Listen, dude, I've said this a million times. There is a built-in audience for this bullshit. Period. And they believe anything you tell them, and they will defend anybody.
You know, and they're real easy to catch in, like, logical fallacies. I mean, these are literally the same people that's like, hey, you think we made it to the moon in 1969? They're like, oh, hell no, that's impossible. Fuck no, it was the greatest hoax ever staged. But you ask them if Hitler made it in 1945, and they think he's got entire bases on the dark side and shit.
Yeah,
I mean, literally.
It never ends. It doesn't end.
They'll say, Buzz Aldrin saw UFOs on the moon. But then they'll turn around and say, but we never were on the moon.
Right. Exactly. They say a lot of things, a lot of stupid things. You know, listen, my philosophy is these people fall in two different categories. Either you're effing stupid or you're mentally ill.
Well, I've always kind of looked at it this way, and you can kind of see it in every aspect of the paranormal, is there is a vast difference between people who have actually experienced aspects of it and those that just think it's cool or want it to happen or were huge X-Files nerds back in the day or some shit like that. I mean, there is a vast gulf of difference, and these two groups are simply not reconcilable. I mean,
and
like
they have mental problems.
I mean, look, how many stupid, idiotic theories have you read about this missing 777 on Facebook? I mean, every single day there's
Dude,
at least a dozen
I just ignore
people
it.
Spouting that crap.
I just ignore it. I mean, these are the same people saying that Paul Walker got taken out by an effing drone. You know what I mean? And they wholeheartedly believe it. And they convince themselves completely.
I mean, why would they take Paul Walker out with a drone? You'd be watching Fast and Furious 7, and all of a sudden, Paul Walker would cut in and tell you how...
Apparently, he was...
Truth. I mean...
Apparently, he was a plant or a spook or something. You know? I mean, who knows, dude?
Well, hey, man. I mean, I have genuinely been accused of being one of the generals in charge of the military abduction program. I mean, hell, dude. You thought you were just getting me filling in, but you're actually having, like, the man in charge of all MILABs right here.
I don't think you're filling in, dude. Dude, you're our guest for tonight, man. You're our guest.
Well, hey, I can roll with it either way.
You can. Do you know what, dude? You can be whatever you want to be tonight.
I want to be a pirate.
No, I'm the pirate.
All right. Well, all right, I'll be a privateer then. Huh?
There you go.
I've got my letter of mark.
So evidently on this airline, people don't understand how big the goddamn ocean is.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we've got satellites and we've got technology, and how the hell can you lose a plane? Well, it's like, look what they're doing now. Every single damn pallet that washes off a container ship that somebody finds are like, is this evidence? And I like the way the news frames it. It's like, credible evidence? Question mark. Anytime you see a headline with a question mark behind it, you immediately know it's shit.
Yeah, they're just going to rehash the same old quotes, and, you know, there'll be a sentence, you know. But listen,
is Barack Obama really a
water? Does not compress. So when that plane hits the water, it might as well be hitting concrete.
I mean, yeah, it all comes down to the density, and water is a very dense thing.
It's going to completely disintegrate. So you're not going to have. You may have some, pieces like a door, there may be some parts like some sections of seating that got thrown, I don't know, you know, a couple miles away or something like that. And that's all going to float to the bottom. And, it's going to be spread out all over the goddamn place. It really is. And the thing is that, you know, listen, it's pretty obvious the plane was brought down or the pilot got really confused what was going on. But, you know, they turned the transponder off and then made, a right turn to Albuquerque.
How they
knew where it was at 4 hours later? There was this little device that pings for the weather. It's like some weather, real obscure weather data collecting device, and it pings information. I mean, it, you know, talks to a satellite and then it goes back down to wherever, like National Weather Service or some crap like that.
Yeah, even the engines. I mean, the engines were phoning home back to the satellite, reporting, you know, performance and efficiency.
Yeah. You know, you don't just turn off the transponder. There's 50 other things talking to everything out there. You know, it's the way things are now. You know,
well,
it's not like
I'm kind of wondering, you know, I do wonder exactly how they didn't find it. I mean, like, you watch the beginning of a Tom Clancy movie. I forget which one it is. It shows, like, you know, well, we triangulated this one low-power cell phone signal from three different listening stations, so we've determined its location. I mean, you think they can pull off some crazy CSI magic shit like
it's
that?
Not
but
real life.
They can't.
50 different agencies with their meat hooks in it, and, you know, all sorts of misinformation going on. Listen, it's the same thing that happens with, like, a Sandy Hook or the Boston Marathon. If you read the news, like, right after something like that happens, there's just all sorts of information coming out, and a lot of it isn't true, even if it's reported by legitimate sites. You know what I'm saying? Like MSNBC, CNN, Fox, or whatever. They're reporting all this stuff.
Well, part of the reason is the mainstream media, they read a tweet from somebody who doesn't know his ass from his elbow, and they're reporting it as headline news.
Right, but see, you had all these agencies involved from all these different countries saying different things. That's why all these relatives and everything and people are so pissed off, because they can't get a straight answer from anybody. You know, they're pretty confident where the plane crashed at. But, you know, the ocean is this vast, you know, and there's all sorts of stuff on the bottom of the ocean. So they're getting these satellite images of the bottom of the ocean, and it could be anything down there. Really, it could be anything that's down there. So So that's why they're having problems locating this stuff. You know, they found different oil slicks in different areas of the, you know, different oceans, and they thought they were something that went down. It could have been a boat that's not getting reported, you know, from one of these third world countries, you know, that sank or something like that, or just had a leak, you know, and then there's this huge oil spill, and they're like, oh, there's the plane. You know, and that's not the plane. It's something else entirely. But see, they go and they report that, trying to get something out, trying to get information to the people, and it just makes things worse.
Yeah, one of the stories that really kind of, I was like, really, when I saw it, was like, well, Digital Globe released, you know, moderately high-res images so people can get on there and look, and then, of all people, Courtney Love pops up and's like, I think I found the plane, look at this.
Yeah, and it got all sorts of attention.
Bitch killed Kurt. She can kiss my ass.
Dude, Kurt was... Yeah, she probably did kill him. He probably... She wasn't quite as nuts back then. She was pretty nuts, you know, when he died. But just because she was a, you know, a heroin girl or whatever.
I mean, I've always looked at her and thought, I mean, if you look up skank in the dictionary, there's a picture of her.
Yeah, there's some the difference of skank going on. But she went through a period where she had her shit together, dude. Hello?
I think Joe is actually trying to get Sasha on the phone now.
Yeah, he's calling her mobile. Hello? You know, listen, it's 2 o'clock in the morning now. She probably fell asleep.
Sometimes Skype just does not like to work.
Yeah, he's calling her mobile. He's calling her mobile. You know, there was a time Courtney Love had her stuff together. She got off drugs. She got managed, you know, because she's got mental problems. She was, you know, acting in movies. She was, her band Hole was doing pretty good. And then she just went right off the frickin' deep end again. You know, and you have people like Charlie Sheen. The dude is totally, you know, when he's whacked out on crack and hasn't been asleep for 4 days. You know, and the ants are crawling on him, and he's watching the sparkle fall down and the glitter in front of his eyes. You know, he's a little paranoid, and, you know, he's becomes an Alex Jones junkie.
I don't know. I think Charlie Sheen actually, like, pulled off a coup of epic proportions. I mean, the media basically tried to take this guy and be like, oh, look at what a failure Charlie's been. He's fallen a long way since Men at Work, you know. And it... He basically turned it around and, like, increased his brand and became, you know, back in the limelight again. You know, I'm like, congratulations, Charlie. I mean, you played these idiots.
Look at Robert Downey Jr., dude. Dude, he was arrested. He was so wasted. He was in the wrong house sleeping in a kid's bed, naked. When he got arrested last. When he finally said, maybe I should go to rehab. You know, getting pulled over with tons of heroin in his car and, you know, meth and coke and, you know, you name it. He had it on him all the time.
I mean, the tabloid media absolutely loved that back in the day.
Yeah, but that's what they do. They're like, you know, they're vampires, and people just love this stuff because people's lives are so effed up as it is. They love to read about other people's effed up lives. I don't know. Maybe it makes them feel better, and they judge them. Have you ever gone on one of these, like, Entertainment Weekly, and they'll run some story on some person? I don't know. Let's say Lindsay Lohan, and some messed up thing that she did, and you read these comments. And these people, there's the people that are judging her. Oh, what a horrible person, yada, yada. And then there's people that write in comments like they know her. and like they
leave Britney alone.
Yeah, and these, you should read this stuff. It scares the crap out of me because this person is walking the streets.
Oh, it does, man. I mean,
I know Lindsay, and she wouldn't do this. They don't know Lindsay. they read some articles. You know, they're obsessed fans.
Well, man, it's like I go to read a Daily Mail article or something like that about...
Oh, they're the worst,
teaching,
dude.
Right? Any other topic besides celebrities, man. It's like I'm looking at the articles going, like, scrolling down the right side of the screen, and it's all utter tripe about celebrities that I haven't even heard of two-thirds of these people.
Well, a lot of them from Britain.
Well, a lot of them are American, too, but, I mean, still, I mean...
And they're all D-listers, and they're like, oh, look at her shoes. And the article's like 5 pages long. and they got little abbreviations for their names, like, oh, look at ScarJo. You know, and I'm like, I just want to throw up. And like you said, dude, right, it's like, and there's like 50 articles. It's not just a couple. You can just keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. I was born without a vagina. I mean, that was an actual story. I went to have sex, and I didn't have a vagina, and nobody told me. I'm so angry.
You have people that, like, can tell you every D-list celebrity that's broken up with their partner, fiancé, or whatever over the last, like, 3-month time span, but... You know, they have no idea of, like, what kind of stuff Fukushima is pissing into the ocean right now.
Yeah, or what's going on with that, or nor do they care.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things is that a lot of people are, like, blatantly unaware of, and I haven't seen the mainstream media do anything but run a little crawl about it on the bottom of the screen that is on screen for maybe 10 seconds and completely ignored while Bill O'Reilly's screaming at you or some shit like that, was that problem in New Mexico with the WIP plant, the waste isolation, waste isolation,
right,
project plant, some shit like that. But anyway, they're supposed to be storing low-level nuclear waste there. The roof of one of these old salt mines, they still don't know what happened.
Crushed
a container or one burst, and there was actually, like, they were finding plutonium and americium, like, a mile away. And... I mean, they were finding radiation in Carlsbad. And it turns out
first
that the filtration system wasn't even working. When it happened, it's like the filtration vents were supposed to be cut off, and all the air that was being expelled was supposed to go through these 99.9% effective HEPA filters. But it turns out for entirely 3 weeks, these shutters only closed halfway, and it was just belting plutonium out into the air.
Right.
Which plutonium wasn't even supposed to be there. It was supposed to be, like, low-level crap, like that socket set you use to wrench on the reactor. See, that's
supposed to
be the trash, but no, there's actual high-level waste there, so it's just a lie on every single level.
It's like you and me understand this, being in IT and being network people, is that you have to have a disaster recovery plan, not only on paper, but you have to test it physically. You know, that's why people do these drills when there's a plane wreck and stuff like that. Somebody dropped the ball, and they didn't do their due diligence. That's what happened at Chernobyl. They were actually running a safety test when that malfunctioned.
Well, see, I kind of see Chernobyl as, Chernobyl was a colossal screw-up. I mean, it was just the perfect storm.
What was the bad design?
Yeah, that caused that reactor to basically blow its top. But what scares me about, like, a lot of the, here's the thing about a lot of our plants here in America. There are a few of them that are shuttered, and basically these were plants that were only supposed to have a 20 or 30-year lifestyle, but, I mean, we're planning on extending their running times up to 80 years or so. I mean, there are literally parts that are wearing out on these things, and a disaster is, like, literally, I mean, it's going to happen. It's not a question of when.
And there's life forms. There's life forms now growing on the rods. And there's,
they're finding new forms of bacteria and that can live in high radiation. I mean,
Yeah, and they're finding, like, all the trees and everything and all the leaves and all of the things that died in the initial Chernobyl blast are not decomposing. You know, like if a tree dies, you know, in 10 years, stump and everything is pretty much sawdust. You know, 40 years later, there's no decomposition. Somebody's got to go clean up all that stuff now. They can't burn it because that's what they're afraid of. It's all dry. It's a tinderbox. If that catches on fire, all that irradiated stuff in the and all the leaves and the trees and everything that burns is going to go right up into the air.
And the jet stream's going to carry it right over here.
Yeah, just like how they found out about Chernobyl. People in Sweden were going to work at a nuclear plant, and they were setting off the alarms when they went in, that they were, like, irradiated. And they're like, what the hell's going on? And they realized that there was a nuclear accident somewhere. Do you know that they had to dig a tunnel under Chernobyl to stop the melted core from hitting that river? Because when uranium like that hits water, you have nuclear fission. And now that would have been a disaster on a global scale. 100 guys. I'm sure you've seen that picture of the big, huge, like lava-looking goop that they took a picture of from around the corner.
Yeah.
With the mirror. I'm sure you've seen that. Well, that was the core. And they actually had to dig a tunnel underground while that thing was melting through the different floors of the reactor. Because there's a river that flows right there. There was a fisherman guy fishing in there when the reactor blew up. He was one of the first guys to get killed. But if that would have hit that water, because they've had natural nuclear explosions before. Millions of years ago, they found in a uranium, when they were digging down into a uranium mine, they found evidence of a nuclear explosion. And that's because water got down there, mixed with the uranium, and boom. You know, that's just...
Man, you know, water and radiation is a big problem with Fukushima, too, because, I mean, right. What everybody doesn't realize is this thing is basically built on top of an ancient riverbed. I mean,
right. It's
in an aquifer that's just pushing all this crap directly out in the Pacific. And they literally have no idea how to fix this. I mean, we're at the point where you'd be like Optimus Prime or Superman or some shit that could go in there and literally scoop out this melted corium.
You know,
I mean,
or
this
have,
is like nuclear toxic death lava that is burning its way through the floor of this facility.
Well, I don't think it's melted down like that yet.
Well, it's still the latest NHK and TEPCO is saying that the corium has actually gone liquid, but it's still in the it hasn't breached the pressure vessel yet. But I mean, it's damn near reacting with the coolant. I mean, they're starting to spill some nasty isotopes out of this stuff now. And you know, as far as the effect on wildlife, there's this one group out on the West Coast. I forget their name. We're not even checking what's in the tuna and in all the wildlife that we're pulling out of the ocean right now. We're monitoring cesium levels, which aren't really high enough for anybody to worry about. But this one advocacy group said they're going out and doing their own testing, and they're finding strontium, which is worse. Strontium than the calcium. This stuff gets in your bones and irradiates your ass forever.
Yeah.
And it's got a longer half-life than cesium, too. She's basically said that, look, you know, that somebody needs to officially start measuring for this isotope. And it's really scary. I mean, they're really trying to pretend and pull the wool over everybody's eyes and act like there's really no big problem here. I mean, it's really not going to become apparent to everybody until one day somebody walks into the grocery store and is like, where's my chicken of the sea tuna fish? How come there's no more?
Or how come it's not going bad? How come I can leave it out on the kitchen shelf, on the kitchen counter, and 9 weeks later go back and it's still perfectly fine, not decomposed, you know, not gone bad, there's nothing growing on it. Irradiated food, like irradiated steak and stuff like that, it's got a shelf life. You don't even need to refrigerate it. It doesn't go bad.
Well, and in Fukushima, I mean, in Japan right now, in the outskirts of Fukushima, I mean, they're basically forcing farmers to continue growing rice and shit just to act like there's no problem. And this food's getting out there on the market. And that's why basically nobody, everybody stopped importing everything from Japan recently, too.
Yeah, and they bitched about our apples. There was some worm or something like that going around with our apples, and they're like, oh, no, we don't want to eat this stuff. We don't want it around. You know, but, you know, what's ironic.
What's sad is you really have to, like, dabble into the Japanese alternative media to actually be able to find out crap like that.
Right.
Really, I mean, just the snow job they're pulling on everybody here.
But there's people that actually ignore the government warnings, and they go in there, and they feed the stray animals. They feed... because they were people just had to pick up and leave, just like they did at Chernobyl, and you know all of the cattle, all the people's animals, their pets, you know, they essentially, if they couldn't get out, they starved to death. You know, they went in there and they found just thousands of cattle and horses and you know dogs and cats and stuck in people's houses and. You know, and they go in there and they feed the ones that are running around because they're all feral now. They're all wild.
Well, you know, they're just going to double down on the whole disinformation campaign, right? I mean,
well, those
Olympics
people
are,
get
the
those
Olympics
people
are
actually
going,
get new readings.
Going there in 2020. So, I mean, they're just going to, you know, close their eyes and stick their fingers in their ears and hum and still pretend there's no real problems. I mean, they're just going to double down on that now that the world spotlight's going to be on them. Which has pretty much ignored this entire crisis.
Dude, our attention span, America's attention span, I don't know if, I'm not up with the European media. So, you know, I don't know how much reporting Fukushima and these other types of things are getting. But the American media, the reason people's attention spans are so short is because these types of things don't get hits on websites.
Well, the only
they don't sell magazines. It's all doom and gloom. You know, people want to.
They're genuinely informed about this topic, or people that are going out of their way into the deepest, darkest corners of the internet to find this information that's not getting publicized. And unfortunately, the wrong people are also getting some of this information too, because the whole conspiracy crowd. I mean, Alex Jones has picked up on the whole Fukushima thing. I mean, they are, like, overblowing, like, all the nightmare scenario people love this shit. But they're trying to sell you, like,
selling the iodine pills and...
iodine pills and shit, yeah.
And people are buying it.
Are you prepared for the toxic fallout from Fukushima? You know?
Oh, my God, no, I'm not. Oh! What do I need to do? You need to go... Freaking shoot yourself is what you need to do.
Hi, I'm Alex Jones, and I've got a pill that will save your and your family's life.
That's right, man. You know, what are you going to do when it all does fall apart and, you know, none of that shit works, or it's past its prime, or... I mean, really, what are you going to do?
You know, those iodine pills, they might protect your thyroid from the radioactive isotope of iodine, but they're not doing anything for the strontium or anything else that you're, like, basically eating and not knowing about, so...
And you'll be blind in a couple of weeks, and, you know, all your hair starts falling out, and none of the water's drinkable.
But
your thyroid's fine.
These people that take colloidal silver until they literally turn blue, you know?
I know, I saw that guy. He actually died. The Smurf guy?
Impossible. I mean, he should have stopped all the oxidation in his body and lived to be 700.
Yeah, man, it was, he got in with, you know, those doom and gloom people. And they're like, oh, you got to take this stuff. And he turned blue, and he was a Smurf, man. He was also on Daily Mail. I think that's why
But like these breatharians, all these people out there, I exist purely on sunlight and air.
Plant
needs water.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Those people just They're I mean, I just place a crystal to my head and I'm fine.
And I channel the Oregon energy through my mind. Yeah. You know.
Glory be.
I mean, I'm not gonna like completely and totally shit on like, you know, all that homeopathic, you know, naturalistic Reiki. I mean, with a lot of people, I mean, there may be something to that if you believe, you know, positive things will happen, like the secret shit, you know. I'm not going to write that off completely, but look, man, I'm a type 1 diabetic, dude. I mean, you're diabetic too, right?
Yeah.
If, what happens to us if we run out of insulin? We are going to die. There is no amount of prayer or meditation that's going to realign our DNA.
I have.
And make our pancreases start working again.
Yeah, I have stage 3 kidney disease. I just had a liver biopsy. You know, I think about that all the time. I'm like, I'm not even going to, if stuff starts happening, you know, I've said this too. I'm just going to get a lawn chair and, you know, a fifth of Jack or maybe a case of beer or something and just, you know, watch it all go to hell because I'm not going to live through it. You know what I mean? I'm just going to be, you know, dead weight.
You know, I kind of look at it like this. You know, if the end of days does happen and all of a sudden it becomes like Mad Max or life is Fallout 3 now, I'm going to have an awesome time for about 2 months till I run out
yep.
of and die.
Exactly. I'm going to be killing people and taking their stuff. And
you know, actually, I have taken a look at that. And this is something you might be interested in, too, that... During World War II, there were a couple of Jewish refugees named Victor and Ava Saxel. They were in Shanghai, China, when World War II broke out, and of course that disrupted everything. There were a lot of diabetics that weren't getting insulin in Shanghai, too. Well, Ava was a diabetic, and her husband, Victor, was a chemist. And I've looked up how to do it. I could probably do it. That basically, if you get enough mammal pancreases... I mean, they developed and they came up with their own method, and they kept everybody alive until, you know, the pharmaceutical insulin started coming back in.
Well, like
so there is hope. And I've got a backup plan, dude, based on wild hogs and cattle.
I've come for your pancreas.
I mean, all I need is a couple of different kinds of...
like the wallpaper six to the...
There you go.
See, I kind of look at it this way. I'm going to be the king of the diabetics. I'm going to have an army of loyal serfs to basically do my bidding for me. I'll cut off the fucking insulin. You know? What's up?
That's pretty funny. That's a good idea.
Well, we'll see if I can actually get it figured. If shit does hit the fan.
Well, you need to figure it out before.
So I ran out of insulin.
Before it hits the fan, dude, you need to figure it out and have a plan, and then you can write a book and sell it and make a ton of money.
Oh, we're getting yelled at for break.
Are we? Oh, I'm not on I'm not on Pal Talk.
There we go. Glenn's got a centrifuge. Hell, he's an actual chemist. We got a scientist in the audience. I mean,
all right, guys, we gotta go.
We might just live through this shit, guy.
There you go. I may not want to. Hey, man, we gotta go on break for 10 minutes, and Jason and I'll spend the next hour pulling stuff out of our ass. And all right, guys, we'll see you in 10 minutes.
Like the seashore, cling to the sea. Get rid of your shadow.
Visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
The paranormal.
Ghosts.
Spirits.
Demons.
Reincarnation.
Past lives.
The afterlife.
Divination.
Exorcisms.
Witchcraft.
The unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Furman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live.
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Truth is reality. The connection is you. Check out Catherine Buckaloo on Truth Connections Radio, Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 107.7 FM, the Paranormal Radio Network.
Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our 3-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
To UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Everybody, welcome to the second hour of Citizen Sane. I'm Guy Weddle. Sasha is still somewhere out in the ether, but she's just not here. So you got to listen to my big fat mouth, and I'm joined by Jason Wilson, tonight's guest.
I got a big fat mouth too.
Yeah, we do. And but listen, man, I want to start out this second hour, and I want to talk about what the hell's going on with the Science Channel, because they've got a glut of new shows like this MUFON, Hangar One, and Close Encounters, and the NASA Unexplained Files. I understand this stuff, you know, gets ratings and stuff like that. It's just disposable TV. You don't really learn anything.
Exactly, and like, they're historical UFO shows. They're just basically going over and rehashing literally every single case that I've been hearing about since I've been involved in this field for 15 or 20 years.
They suck. They all suck.
There's no smoking gun evidence. It's just,
listen,
you know, that's cool that they got things about interesting stories, but like, their little Alien Hunters one that they got with Daryl Sims on it and shit, and they're the team's going out and trying to find
it. I watched one episode of that, and that was when they were in Sedona, And then I watched maybe 15 minutes of another one where they were going to find an alien base in this fucking lake.
Yeah, dude, I saw that shit. And I was like, let's go snorkel around in this pond and
yeah, and then I'm like, that's exactly what he was doing. And I'm like, you know, I put on SpongeBob. You know, I mean, that was more stimulating than, you know, what was on TV. Listen, this Hangar One is an abomination.
What gets me about that other show, though, is it's like they act like they're serious. Like, what they're doing is
like
serious work.
It's called,
I mean, Daryl Sims is playing his Texas thing with his hat and all his dick swagger running around and shit like that. It's like, come on, man. Y'all are a show
Michael
that's
Farrah
gonna,
and some
you
other
You know what's
going
to happen to them. In six or seven episodes, they're going to get shit canned.
But dude, you know what? You know, it's the same thing with like Monster Quest and these shows. At the end of the show, what have we learned? Nothing.
You know,
they have
basically
no evidence.
One of the first shows established the bar. In Search of with Leonard Nimoy set the bar for like paranormal television, and nobody has reached it since.
Yeah, well, it's all fast edits. It's all, you know, editing and it's more of that. And it's the same production companies that do all this crap.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Man. I mean, they all have, like, the exact same, that they leave the same shitty taste in your mouth, you know?
Yeah, and Sci-Fi Channel had all this crap, people running around the dark with these stupid-ass cameras, and they're running, the camera's all moving around. Oh, did you hear that?
Exactly, man.
You
know? Well, you were
in the swamp, dude. Of course you're going to hear a freaking sound. Oh, the motion detector's going off. You know, they're in a field, you know. Maybe a mouse walked by or something, you know, and they're running. Oh, did you see anything? Oh, no. There's nothing. You know, maybe
it was a... Well, a UFO sighting happened in this field 35 years ago, so we're going to wear cameras that point on our face, strap on some night vision goggles, and go dick around at 2:30 in the morning and find the truth.
Actually do anything. They're not actually doing anything but running around. I mean, that's the show. And listen,
and then you see him get all freaked the hell out by something, and then it turns out to be a cow. You know,
it's always a cow, you know. But listen, man, this Hangar One show—they had a scientist on there, Kevin Grazer, and he is a straight-up hater of all things like this show. And I was really shocked to see him on there, and. Like, he won't do Ancient Aliens, and, you know, he's got red hair. He was the science advisor for, like, Battlestar Galactica, the movie Gravity. I mean, he works a lot with Hollywood on sci-fi stuff, and he does a lot of these science shows and everything. He's a very grounded individual. And this poor guy is sitting there, and they're these MUFON people with a straight goddamn face are saying, well, maybe... you know, it's quite possible that Iran knocked down our drone and brought it down without hurting it with a tractor beam. And they spent like 20 minutes on this. And I'm like, you're effing kidding me, right, MUFON? All the stuff and all the data that you have accumulated over, you know, however long you've been in business, you just took a big old crap on. Any respectability that you had is gone. It's gone. It really is.
Who I feel sorry for is Robert Bigelow, because he wasted a little bit of money on MUFON, and this is one of the interesting stories that I've heard about it. And I'm phrasing it as a story because I can't vouch for its 100% authenticity.
He wanted their data.
Yeah, as I was told, he wanted their data. You know, he wanted all their case files. So they bring over a few cardboard boxes filled with, like, actual paper files, and they're like, what the fuck is this shit, dude? You know?
Listen, you know, in the official flight manuals for pilots, they're not told to report UFOs to the FAA. They are told to report them to Bigelow's reporting center. It's actually in there. Robert Bigelow is one of the contractors that I think is involved. Now, this is just personal, it's my speculation, that is involved with getting a lot of this UFO data from the government. Because they don't know what to do with it. Well, the military. Or whoever.
Well, Robert Bigelow is one of those people that, I mean, he, through some weird circumstance, which I'm not going to speculate on, this guy basically owns space. I mean, he's one of the only people, and I've heard that basically his deal is he owns our orbital slots. He's basically one of the only people that can put something into space when and if he wants to. I mean, he's heavily involved in, like, the in aeronautics and aerospace. I mean, you'd think that a billionaire aerospace guy with a hard-on for UFOs would be the greatest thing to ever happen to this field. Well, he tried to work with it with MUFON, and unfortunately it'll probably never happen again because he'll never get that nasty taste out of his mouth.
Yeah, and the reason, dude, when I first started doing Mavis with Jeff, there was a guy that he had a pretty big UFO reporting database, and he was going to come on our show like at the end of the hour or whatever, at the end of the show, and do his little UFO reporting shtick, you know, report on the new cases and, you know, updates on stuff and stuff like that. It never happened, but the reason it never happened is that Bigelow called him up and threw a bunch of money at him and bought all of his data, all of his files. And he's been going around and doing that stuff forever. And I think the reason that he went and tried to do whatever he did in MUFON was to get access to all their data. Unfettered access to everything. And they probably gave it to him. Whoever was running MUFON, and he didn't want to be involved in MUFON because MUFON is just a big, you know, right now, I don't know what sort of credibility it has when they started making tabloid TV. I know a few years ago, MUFON was involved in a TV show called UFOs Over America, and these guys, it showed all the field work and all the things that they did to determine whether things were real or hoaxed or whatever, or they would find natural explanations for things. And this is the show that had Jaime Musan on there, and MUFON busted this kid in Mexico for making all these fraudulent pictures. And Jaime's like, well, in my gut, I believe him. And, you know, they had MUFON had photo people look at these pictures, and they're clearly copied and pasted, and, you know, they're completely manipulated. And Jaime is like, well, I want to have my own guy look at it. And his own guy says, well, I don't think these were manipulated. You know, the aliens will change metadata and stuff like that on pictures. They will actually go in and do stuff. They will go in and manipulate the image.
I mean, if they can travel thousands of light years through space and time to fuck with us, I mean, they can certainly deal with some exit data on a photo,
those
right?
Crafty aliens, you know, and they, you know, they've changed all the data, you know, all the reporting data that an operating system does on a file, you know. And, you know, that's the type of stuff they were dealing with. You know, they purposely let all these Mylar balloons off in the sky. And, you know, and YouTube blew up. Oh, my God, it's a shape-shifting UFO. And there was just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments. And not one person was like, those are balloons. And the guy who let them go is laughing his ass off. You know, and it's just a perfect example of how people are. They believe, like, I don't believe anything I see in a picture or a video. I don't believe anything I see anymore. Zero. You know, unfortunately, I'm to the point where I just throw it all out because, you know, the Belgian Triangle or whatever, from Belgium, you know, that supposedly knocked out of the park 100%. It even fooled Jacques Vallée. The guy finally came out and said, hey, you know, it's a fake. Here's how I did it. You know what I mean? So, you know, and it was credible. I mean, these guys were, they were using science and they were bringing in scientific experts on different types of, you know, things, whether they be electricians or,
Yeah, but you know the truth of it all. They know, these people know nothing compared to all these Facebook experts. Oh my God, all of this shit that runs across my news feed.
I got rid of all of them. I don't even want to see it.
They amuse me too much to get rid of them. I mean, I genuinely, hell, it makes me feel smart sometimes when I look at some of the crap that people fall for.
Yeah, dude, it's like I would wake up in the morning and I would drink a cup of coffee, and by the time I'm drinking the coffee, I'm so damn depressed. You know, I'm just depressed, and my hatred of my species just is validated. You know, I don't hate my species, but you know what I mean. My species is just validated every single damn day, and I got tired of it.
Well, I mean, it's hard not to, man. I mean, you see these people, like, fall for, I mean, and just utterly believe, and it, I mean, they let bullshit become the guiding factor of their entire lives. I mean, there really are a lot of parallels between, I mean, it's like they all become their own type of religious fundamentalists.
It's all fundamentalism, all of it. And it's the same mental illness that has people, like I was talking to you during the break, I've got a couple friends out of religion, and to start thinking on their own and finding their own path, and they immediately run to someone like David Wilcox or some of these other Love and Light people, and they're all of a sudden, you know, the next coming of Jeebus or something. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, no, put that down.
I mean. His
forehead, you know, will take out your eye. It'll put an eye out, man.
And, like, I know these people, it's like, you know, you talk to somebody, sort of get to know them, they seem reasonably intelligent, and all of a sudden they start posting crap like that, like, I forget their names, but it's this couple that is supposedly, like, channeling Abraham through them to help all pathetic people through their lives and everything.
Alpha Arfa.
That could be them. I forget them. You know, it's like these same people that watch The Secret and think that they've got the keys to the universe in their pocket.
Yeah. And they know something that you don't. That's what I tell people.
Exactly. Dude,
they
just
don't know anything. You know, it's
like they're the only ones that are enlightened, that they're so much smarter and above all these other people that are falling for all this other bullshit. They're the ones that know. I mean, they genuinely put themselves on a pedestal above everybody else. Oh, man, the number of times I've been looked down upon and called, with spite, a low vibrational energy being. You know, it's exactly like a Christian telling me, you go to hell and you die, you know.
Yeah.
It's the exact same crap. I mean, they're basically, maybe there is something to that whole herd philosophy. I mean, these people want to be of something bigger so bad. And we were talking about earlier, like all these people that are channeling like Ashtar Commander and Bashtar and all these Love and Light aliens with the stupid shit that you see.
A Galactic Federation of Light.
Yeah, and they start to fit in the conspiracy crowd too, and they're like, the Galactic Federation has announced that this is the one that got me, that Bill Gates is going to be arrested for his crimes against humanity and charged by the Court of Light, and his arrest is imminent, and so is George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Margaret Thatcher and everybody else you've ever heard of that's ran a company or ran a country or anybody who's ever made a name for
themselves. And they always say things like, if you only knew, and I'll say back to them, well, you don't know either. You don't know anything either.
This is the point of winning.
Hey, you know the first time I heard the Illuminati in a conspiracy framework was when I was listening to one of these techs at MCI. He would only do like 4 calls a day because every single person he talked to, he would start this conspiracy crap talking about the Illuminati and, you know, and the people are like, wait, really? What about my hard drive? You know, he's just going on and on and on and on, you know, because these people know nothing about history, what the Illuminati really is and or was. You know, it was
everybody's got their spin on the Illuminati and the NWO. Now, the ones that scare me are like the Christian fundamentalist ones. It's like, you know why all these bad people are like running the world and doing all these bad things? Because it's Satan. And then there are idiots that are like, no, it's not Satan, it's the aliens. And then they're like, no, it's not Satan, it's Russia.
They're usually dominionists, meaning that, you know, they believe that we can destroy the world all we want. We can kill all the animals and spill all the oil we want. God's just going to hand us over a new planet when it's...
Yeah,
no
God peace. Gave us this planet to rape. It's our right
and
as
they
you...
They believe that wholeheartedly. And these people are politicians. And
Well, man, what trips me out is when they start getting into the science, too. I mean, like, the whole abiotic oil thing... God loves us so much, oil just, you know, regenerates out of...
And we can't use wind as a power source because it's finite. I mean, we're going to run out of wind. I mean, they said that in a congressional committee.
Well, that segues into one of the things I wanted to talk about, too, is cosmos, because... Man, the original cosmos of Carl Sagan. When I was in Malcolm in the middle school after kindergarten, dude. It's when I was in kindergarten, I already knew how to read and count to 20 and all that good crap.
Right.
So one day they sent a couple of Navy psychologists. Well, they were in dress uniforms too. They gave me an IQ test. Said my IQ was 149. So they took me and they took all the kids from the Long Beach and LA Unified School Districts. And they put us in this special Malcolm in the Middle super nerd class. And then one day in the second grade, I still remember it, they wheel in this TV. And it wasn't just any TV. Remember, this was like 83, 84, or some crap like that,
yeah.
Right? This was actually a Sony Trinitron TV, dude, like a big 27-incher with a laser disc player on the card under it. They wheeled it in, and I watched Carl Sagan's Cosmos on a Sony on Laserdisc. And it absolutely blew my mind. I mean, my little mind had its first little epiphany. I mean, I actually had this feeling where I felt infinitesimally tiny, small against the great vastness of the universe.
Yeah, but it didn't. It was humbling, but it wasn't belittling. You know, it didn't make us. It wasn't meant to make us feel.
I'd say it was
insignificant.
You know.
Yeah, you know, I watched it when it first ran. I was just first starting high school in, you know, because I'm like 48 in 1980, and that's about the time it aired. And I would watch Monty Python, and then I watched Cosmos, and then Netflix.
Yeah, if you stayed up long enough, way back in the day on PBS, you could catch that British stuff like Monty Python,
Benny Hill.
You know, Benny Hill.
Great,
man. I miss staying up till like midnight to watch Benny Hill.
Yeah, and you could watch on USA Network. You could watch like Night Flight, which was just this whole 6-hour block of just crazy crap. They'd have stuff from Japan and. You know, fighting giant robots, and then the next hour they'd have a Ramones concert, you know, and the next hour there'd be some other crazy crap.
Oh, man, and just the sign-offs all the channels used to do, you know, like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning or so, they'd, like, play that patriotic, like, they'd show,
yep.
like, 15, and then some Eagles and crap, and then some Doc America. We're off.
And then snow.
Test pattern, you know? Test pattern or snow.
Yeah, I saw the first episode of the first Cosmos, of the new Cosmos. It wasn't that bad.
I think Neil deGrasse Tyson is actually, he's like the spiritual successor to Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
One critical thing I will say about it is maybe it's just the old school nostalgia of seeing it when I was a kid, but it seemed like Carl got more information across to you. Well, one of the reasons for that is Carl Sagan had an hour to do his on PBS, and the New Cosmos is cut down to 43 minutes for commercials.
And
I mean, of course it looks better with the CGI and everything, but... I mean,
they put too much stuff in it. Because if you rewatch the first Cosmos, there was a lot of philosophy coming out of Carl. You know what I mean? And a lot of just the way he would go for 10 minutes just talking about a subject, you know, and the wonders of it. You know what I mean? And then he would get
what he said, like, entirely on key, because when he did kind of wax philosophical, and I just rewatched Cosmos, the original one, not too long ago. I mean, when he talks about the Ionians and basically the way, you know, the man has basically crushed science and people that would rather believe in superstitions than actual verifiable evidence. I mean,
it's easier.
Well, I have absolutely no problem with the philosophy that he was putting out there.
Yeah, because, listen, people believe in Stan Romanek and stuff like that because it's easy. And, you know, David Wilcox and these ass clowns and Sean David Morton. You know, it's why I don't watch Ancient Aliens anymore. It's just, I watched the last one because Brent Oldham he's a friend of the show. He's been on like 3 times. He was on there. It was nice seeing his face on there. But then, of course, they switched to David Wilcox, and I got to watch him ramble on. You know, he's, you know, him and David, my God, David Childress. I mean, you just know what's coming with him, man. He'll be talking, and, you know, you can just tell by the way his voice is, you know, and you never know, and he's moving his head, and, you know, aliens, extraterrestrials, beam weapon from space, you know, and I'm just like, here it comes, you know.
Yeah, Ancient Aliens was kind of, after the first season, it was kind of played out. Because, you know, during the first season, it was all stuff that anybody in the paranormal fields basically heard before. It was just nice seeing somebody do a documentary on it. Then it got bad, dude. I mean...
Especially the dinosaur one.
Giorgio Tsoukalos is the most credible person on there right now.
He's barely even on the show anymore.
Yeah, we've had him on the network a couple of times, and... You know, he's actually humble. He's not full of himself.
Right.
I mean, one of the first things he always says is, he's like, look, I'm an ancient alien theorist. He's like, what that means is I'm a guy who looks at this stuff, and I come up with ideas and theories about it, and I just put them out there.
Right.
But, I mean, then they've started bringing on these people that think that they're on some kind of holy quest to bring the truth with, you know, their complete and utter shit, which you really do have to take a step out, a huge leap of faith to even have any credibility in, and the show's just, man, after season one, it was starting to get old. Halfway through season two, they basically lost it, and now it's like they're just bringing on any asshole they can find now.
Yeah, they jumped the unicorn, like, a long time ago. Now, one from last season I did like was the one they did on Pyramids. They've done a couple cool things, like on Ley Lines and, you know, stuff like that, and, you know, the when they talk about engineering things and, you know, there's actual tool marks on stuff, you know. And just the symmetrical things that they were able to do by hand, you know, that nobody can really duplicate today. You know, they're just little nuggets. Just little nuggets of things. You know, like when they talk about plagues and everything like that, I just cringe. You know, and it's just...
Exactly, man. Watch this. If you're into South Park, dude, watch the South Park Thanksgiving Ancient Aliens episode. I mean, they nail it pretty much totally, completely.
Yeah, I got to look it up. It's funny, dude. I mean, they're literally just pulling stuff out of their ass at this point. And they're not even... now it's become like a tabloid. It's evolved into like a tabloid,
you know,
type.
The market basically like enables it, dude. I mean, look at what
sure.
look at case in point is look at exactly what Coast to Coast AM has become. I mean, under the tenure of George Norrie, he gets all these unbelievable assholes on there, throws them
over
softball questions and everything like that. And I mean, the show is like a complete and utter joke. It has no credibility anymore. No, they fired John B. Wells, who used to be the weekend guy, and I mean, he actually had a little bit of spark to him, a little bit of intelligence, and, you know, honestly believed in some things and took stances every now and then. So what does George Norrie do? He has the guy fired. I mean, I mean, how hard can it really be?
Why is George Norrie on Ancient Aliens?
Idiots like that.
I mean, really, no. Why is George Norrie on Ancient Aliens?
It would get me back in the day listening to somebody that would call in to Coast and be like, look, man, I'm having these, like, horrific demons that are, like, infesting my house and making my life a living hell. And they're asking George Norrie for help. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Of all the people, I mean, what, shouldn't you go ask a goddamn priest before you go to George Norrie? I mean...
He's just, you know, getting on the radio.
Well, that's
George Norrie. George Norrie show up, got a little... Got
the
a little cape on.
Especially aliens in general, that's one of my criticisms amongst, like, you know, the new generation of ufologists. Most of the old guard, there are a lot of people that are saying, look, well, how are so many ufologists dying off? Because they're all, like, 70 years old, dude.
Right.
It's just eventually going to happen. And there's nobody younger that's really picking up the mantle. The closest thing we've got are these, the older ones, you know, they're like me. Me and you, like, in the 30s and the 40s and... I mean, here we are talking on the radio, so it might sound like I'm shooting myself in the foot saying this, but honestly, you get some asshole that's done a radio show for a couple of years, and all of a sudden he thinks he's an expert.
Right.
And then other people start thinking, well, maybe this guy is an expert.
And well, they're trying to be celebrities. They're trying to
you know, like Jared
parlay their popularity as credibility. You know,
it's
difference.
Not that hard in this field, especially to be on the skeptic side. When somebody is sitting there holding up a glass full of piss, it's not very hard to be right by calling, pointing, and saying, hey, that's a glass of piss you're holding there. Don't try to play that off on me. And there are these people that think that they're these intellectual messiahs and celebrities just because they point out the obvious, too.
Right. I mean, they parlay their popularity into, you know, trying to do into credibility, and they're completely two different things. I mean, I don't do this to get any sort of, you know, recognition. Neither does Sasha. I mean, we don't even promote this show.
And neither do I, dude. I mean, I just get
we just
on
come
here
on every 2 weeks and run our mouths and
I get on here and vent for a couple hours. Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that everybody should think exactly like I am. I'm just putting my point of view out there, you know, to the ether. Anybody that wants to listen to it, cool.
Yeah, definitely. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't do blogs and all this. I was gonna, you know, and I just don't give a shit.
I'm too lazy. You know the honest truth about it? I'm too goddamn lazy.
Yeah, I don't give a crap.
Efforts to promote myself.
You know, there's so much crap out there already. You know, why do they need one more? Why do they need to hear my big mouth constantly? You know, I'm on the radio, or whatever this is, on the internet. I think we're on the radio on a 5-watt, you know, like there's 6 blocks of people that hear us. Sorry, Joe, in New Orleans, or whatever. And other than that, we just go out to who's ever on listening to internet radio. You know, and, you know, I'm grateful that me and Sasha can, are on this network and can talk and reach a lot of people. You know what I mean? But my goal is to become some sort of personality. You know, if that happens on its own and it's organic, then, you know, then fine.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm
not
really
going to go out and make it, I'm not going to go out and make it about me.
I'm so fed up with the paranormal field, too, that, you know, usually when Heather and I do our show, when we do the Unabridged Universe, I mean, there's enough crap that's going on. We touched on some of it. There's a lot of crap that's going on in the news that people should be aware of that should have some kind of focus put out on it.
Dude, me and you, I mean, or whatever, we could sit and talk for hours. Literally, we could sit here and talk for hours tonight about and never run out of stuff to talk about. Really.
Yeah,
I mean,
But man, I have backed away from the UFO field. I mean, especially like, man, we've all been doing like this internet radio thing, and we've all interviewed the cream of the crop, everybody that's done the talk show circuit, and I'm kind of tired of them, because honestly, the reason I got into this, I figured talking to some of these people that have been researchers for decades, I figured I would learn more about, you know, the contact and the weird things that have been happening going on in my life.
Right.
But I haven't learned a single goddamn thing from any of these people. I mean, literally. I mean, they have all basically been completely and totally useless to me, and I don't really want to bring them on and whore myself out for 2 hours so they can plug their book anymore.
You know, yeah, I'm not. One thing I did not want this show to be, and Sasha definitely didn't want this show to be, was a book of the week or book of the biweekly show. You know, have somebody's book and we talk about their book, yada yada yada. You know, that bores the crap out of me. When I first got into this, before I even did Mavis with Jeff, I was already planning my own podcast, and I was going to talk to, I wanted to talk to just the everyday people, you know, that I meet in my life. You know, I meet a lot of people, and when the conversation gets to, you know, what do I do, you know, and that sort of thing, and it gets brought up, people are very forthcoming, and people love to talk about their experiences, but they know with me that I'm not going to ridicule them. And those are the type of people that I was going to talk to. Of course, that didn't happen. And I tried with Dog Face Gods to do a little bit of that, but, you know, that clearly didn't work out.
You know, my philosophy to doing a show, because, you know, back in the...
I don't care about your book. I'll never read it.
I found my story. I'm like, no, you're just going to come on, and I'm going to say hey, you're going to say hey, and you're going to, you know, tell me what happened. There are a lot of people that just have, like, a problem without, like, they want a script. I mean, they want a script. I mean, they don't want an oddball question, you know, to come at them. I mean, I don't have respect for anybody that can't think on their feet, you know?
Yeah, my whole thing is, or my whole shtick, I guess you would call it, is that I don't have a shtick. I don't have a radio voice. I don't have a different personality when I come on here. It's like another person or two other people sitting around just shooting the shit, just talking about things. You know, people have told me that they like talking to me because I get them out of their element.
Man, isn't it weird hearing some of these professional radio people, like you said, with the voice, it's like, you know, you're talking to them in normal conversation, it sounds just like this, but they go on and all of a sudden it's like, live, you're listening to Citizen Sane on UPRN and 105.7 New Orleans.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really weird to see them do that, that transformation. I mean, especially the ones with an interview voice. I mean, George Norrie is one of those people that kind of does that, you know? I mean, he always sounds precisely the same. And, I mean, come
well,
on.
Well, it's an art form,
so
I guess.
Even
I mean,
the tone of voice is a fucking act.
Right? He went to school. Yeah, he went to school, and he went, you know, it's a craft that he's honed, you know? And I don't dislike George Norrie. I just think as a radio host, he should stick to being a radio host, and he's popular. He really has no business trying to be give scientific theory and stuff like that. He really just I don't think he's an experiencer. Is he like a Gene Steinberg where he's just been in this field for so long, you know? But he's never experienced anything.
I just think basically he's become an infomercial by now. He lets people sell their product for 2 hours, just toes the line. I mean, hey, dude, he's certainly Art Bell. I mean, Art Bell would always reach a certain point and be like, "Come on, man, really?"
Yeah, but you know what?
George
Bell just as guilty. Art Bell, there's some strange romanticism about the 90s in Art Bell and the X-Files and, you know, the remote viewing and the K-Bop and, you know, all that stuff that went down, all the Richard Hoagland stuff, the 19.5. There's some weird romanticism that goes on with that, and it's all a bunch of crap. Art Bell is single-handedly responsible for unleashing an amazing amount of crap into this field, an amazing amount that has just flooded this field with just BS. And now, when he restarted his show, he started same thing. The same thing. He started bringing on his old buddies from back in the day. Just a bunch of crap. That's all it was. It was just crap. There was nothing credible about what he was doing. It was popular type stuff. It was great radio.
Well, hey, man, I kind of liked it because, I mean, it was like, well, I wasn't expecting any revelations of truth or anything, but there was just this nostalgic kick to it. It's like, my God.
Yeah, like I said, it was like great radio.
And I'll say this about Art. I never saw Art as a messiah of the truth, and I don't think he ever really tried to present himself at that. I mean,
no.
He's a showman. And he was a damn good showman, and he's a hell of a lot better of a showman than his replacement was.
I agree. Personally, I don't dislike Art Bell. I'm just irritated at everybody, you know, saying, you know, like there was some credible stuff going on back then, and, you know, people are remote viewing Satan, and... You know, and you had Jonathan Reed and, you know, that whole crowd.
Like the whole Mills hole thing, that it's like this hole that you can put a goat down it.
And it was demons.
But they won't say where it is.
The sound of hell.
And there's the infamous guy who was live on the air with Art Bell while he was flying his plane into Area 51. And they missed
And he got shot down. He's in a Cessna. Oh, and the time traveler. You know, there was all that. It was great radio.
You know how I saw it? I knew it was hokey and it was crap, but I kind of saw it as, well, somebody mentioned Bill Clinton in the room. I kind of looked at it as the same way Bill Clinton gave you that little wink and a smile when he said, no, I didn't have sex with him.
Yes, you did, Bill. Just, you know, suck it up. He just didn't have to answer to a wife and, you know, daughter. He had all the women in the world going, oh, my God, he cheated on me.
I don't know, I've always been a little bit critical about that, and, you know, Hillary Clinton's supposed to be the exemplification of a strong woman, but she just kind of shut the hell up while that was going on, didn't she?
Yeah, they kind of had to. Well, there's, I've seen interviews with Bill where he talks about that and what happened afterwards and what happened with them, and they didn't talk to him for months. They literally just shut them out of their lives because he humiliated them. You know what I mean? And, you know, I don't want to get in politics, dude. I don't want to talk politics. My head will explode.
Yeah, it'll definitely explode if Joe hops in.
Yeah. I will go to New Orleans and shoot Joe in the face.
Yeah, there's enough wrong with everything else that I don't think we really need to go on with politics.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the stories that I read, that this was kind of ridiculous, that, man, look, dude, I've been to college, and I've seen how they treat, like, the football team and the athletes, okay, and UT Austin, I was in Jester East, and I could only look at all the lavish luxuries in Jester West that all the jocks and football players and anybody on an athletic scholarship was. They wouldn't even let us eat in their cafeterias because their stuff was better than the crap that we got, right?
Right.
This article came out that, I forget which college it was. But it
Northwestern.
It exposed one of these, like, gimme little classes that they gave to the people that this class never met. All you had to do was show up at the end of it and submit a final paper, and it showed somebody's final, and it was one paragraph that said, Rosa Parks got on a bus, she wouldn't give up her seat, and that's why black people have rights now. That was basically that one paragraph, and that student got an A- for that entire class.
No,
and that's been showing up and submitting one paragraph. I mean, come on, dude. I mean, really?
Yeah, for the jocks and stuff like that.
See, and now they're trying to make the teacher the scapegoat about it. And this guy was basically said, look, I was basically told to do this class and run it like this, so don't put this shit on me, bro.
Sure.
That's basically what he said.
They'll throw him under the bus. I mean, it's like that in any corporation. I've been, when I worked for GlaxoSmithKline, I was told to do certain things by my boss. And with this meeting with the GlaxoSmithKline person, and not answer her questions and defer her questions to him. Well, I did that, and she was so mad that she marched into him and said, he's got to go. You know, a week later, I was on administrative leave, you know, and I was gone. You know, and it was just through no fault of my own. It was from this scumbag boss that I had. You know? And that's just what happens. They'll throw you right to the wolves, man.
Well, I know we're not supposed to bring up politics, but you're kind of seeing that happen to Chris Christie's little insider circle now that Bridgegate has come up. I mean, he's basically throwing his people to the wolves.
And that chick that he fired, the aide, is saying, give me immunity, and I'll give you all the emails. I'll give you everything. And Chris Christie will be effed. I mean, he's screwed. He'll be screwed.
I don't think he ever really had a chance in the first place, because... I mean,
no. In
blue states, he might play as a moderate Republican that you could vote for, but Jesus Christ, they'd lynch his ass down here in the South, man.
Well, what they'll do is, you know, he'll be one of the nominees or whatever, and what'll happen is they'll bring all that stuff up with Sandy, the Hurricane Sandy, and how he was buddies with Obama. And, you know, and all that stuff. And they'll throw that in his face, you know, for taking care of his constituents, which is what he did. That's what he did. You know, he put aside, and I respected the dude for that. He put aside all his BS, you know, with the election and, you know, and all that.
Well, what did really hit Christie, though, because, I mean, I know some people from Jersey, and, I mean, yeah, they took care of New York City where all the cameras were and everything, but there are still parts of New Jersey that haven't received jack. I mean,
well,
still.
It's all rural. It's all, no, he's the New Jersey governor. You know, so the money that he got was for... You know, New Jersey. And have you ever been to Jersey? I lived in Philadelphia for...
Yeah, didn't he take some of that relief money and blow like $2 million of it or some ridiculous figure on some ad campaign that basically...
Yeah, he's under investigation for taking some of that money. But,
you know, that could have fixed a whole... That could have fixed two blocks of houses, you know?
Sure. You know, but he's got all the bids out there and, you know... Listen... All that stuff, it's like fixing the economy after this massive recession, fixing up after a hurricane or a massive tornado. Stuff doesn't happen overnight. You know, the New Orleans is still, they are still rebuilding. It takes years and years.
I was one of the first people that was like back in New Orleans after Katrina. Joe had pulled a couple of strings and got me a special permit to come in about a week or so before they left everybody else back in.
Right.
And we started working. I mean, me and Joe were basically, you know, working with like a lot of his existing clients, and you know they were paying us out of their pockets right now. You know, because you know basically we were there and able to work too.
Right.
So he did, but then the insurance company started dicking around with getting these people checks. These guys ran out of money. They couldn't float us anymore. Then all of a sudden, Halliburton, of all people, gets all these no-bid contracts to basically fix the city. And literally, one night, there are only a handful of people doing their own work. The next day, it seems like they took every single Mexican that could swing a hammer or knew how to do sheetrock, put them in an F-250, and the place was literally swamped. I mean, there were so many workers that came over there that it wasn't even funny.
Right.
And we basically shut out of all this. The local company that had been there the entire time you know, Joe was, like, born and raised there, you know. His father was doing basically the same thing. We were more or less, you know, shrugged to the side.
They're going to keep all the money, and they're going to, you know, pay these guys, you know, $4 an hour or whatever, maybe even minimum wage if they're on the books. Listen, they cut corners with our soldiers. We had soldiers getting poisoned by bad food, getting electrocuted, taking showers, and dying. There are tons of cases like that where, you know, Halliburton really dropped the ball. You know, those plastic water bottles? They sent truckloads of that stuff to a base, and all these guys started getting sick, started dying, and they sent over tainted water. You know, it was probably sitting in the heat for 4 years or something like that in some warehouse that they had. You know, and they didn't bother to test any of it. They just got it on a forklift, put it on a plane, and sent it out there. You know, that plastic, if you have a hot water bottle and it gets warm in your car, that plastic starts going into that water.
Yeah, and you're basically taking a sip of with the things that plastic are made of. You're basically taking a sip of estrogen water when you're doing it.
Yeah, it's not good.
Do that a couple of times, you grow a pair of tits.
Yeah, man, it's not good for you. It's bad, and they didn't care. They didn't even test it. You know, and that's just. You know, it's just the way it is. It's money talks.
Well, man, I've got a true story about Halliburton, man, because before...
All right, man, we got 5 minutes. Go ahead.
All right. I was working for a sign company. I installed those little idiotic LED signs that are basically eyesores that you see all over the place right now. I installed
you?
That was me. I'm responsible for a lot of them in, like, the South Texas area especially. But, all right, man, I was putting one in for the Halliburton facility off of Jones Road. And, all right, so I pull in. This is like a little one-liner parking sign. It was basically a sign that it was like it would direct you to which parking lot to go to. When one parking lot got full, they switched the sign over. It said, hey, everybody go to the right. You know, a simple little thing. I don't think the thing even cost more than like $2,000 or $3,000, right? So I go to set this thing up, and they were running on wireless. You know, 802.11b, give me enough amplifiers, and I can give you a quarter mile or line of sight,
right.
You know, whatever you wanted. Man, Halliburton was so uber paranoid about this thing that they set up their own dedicated network to run this thing. Dude, and you'll recognize this. This was like 2002 or so. Man, they threw a dual-core Xeon.
Oh, yeah, it's hilarious. Yeah, I can tell you a million stories like that.
Dude, they took like a $10,000, like, you know, top most expensive workstation you can buy. I mean, this thing was running dual Quadros and everything, right?
I mean, you could have run it on DOS, man.
Dude, you could have run this thing on a 48630. Dude, you could have run this thing on a 286, right?
Right.
I mean, literally, it was RS-232. It plugged in, it interfaced to the computer with a serial port, man. But, you know, they set up their own $10,000 network to run this little sign. But here's the interesting thing, dude. While I went in there, it's like security was really heightened. And I am not making this stuff up. Apparently, they were doing some kind of, like, dress drill because the evil emperor was about to show up. I guess Cheney was about to show up. But they had the Halliburton security forces out there doing these marching drills inside of this compound. I'm not shitting you, dude.
It was probably Blackwater.
Yeah, dude, that was back when Halliburton actually fessed up to owning them, you know, before they spin them off 2 or 3 times and change the name half a dozen. But these guys were, like, driving armored personnel carriers in formation. They had assault choppers lined up. They were out there marching in this big square formation. It reminded me of some of that Nazi shit you used to see from back then, right? Dude, they were all carrying full-auto MP5s. I got it close enough to them that I could see. It's like, ooh, they got a full auto setting.
You know, Intel,
on their
hips, the guys at Intel.
Smoke grenades. And, dude, they were marching in formation. They were literally, like, getting ready to put on a big show for somebody. And I was like, Jesus Christ, how much farther down the rabbit hole does this go? I mean, they literally have their own army right there.
Right. Yeah, of course they do. Intel was the same way. They had their own security force. If you went to a security area before you went into where they, like I would have to dress up in a bunny suit and, you know, go in and work on a computer or, you know, whatever. I was in a clean room and, not a computer, but it was because they were all dumb terminals in there. You know, I had to go through the vacuums and I didn't go through the showers because I wasn't actually in the deep fabrication area where they made the actual silicon and all that. But I was in a pretty much a clean room area where you could not wear perfume, you couldn't wear deodorant because, you know, all that stuff comes off your body and goes in the air. You know, you couldn't have any of that. And dude, the security guards places.
I don't need your pube one of your pubes ending up in my CPU, you know.
they had automatic weapons. And you could you know, I saw them every single day. And they'd be like, "Hey guy, how you doing? Let me tell you something, dude. When you went to go in there, it was like they've never seen you before. They don't know anything about you, and it's all business. You know, they're patting you down, they're checking everything, they're checking all your..." Because I had like 16 badges, you know, like a badge you wear at work.
Yeah.
It gets you in a door. Well, I had like 16 of those around my neck, dude, that I had to wear all the time. Because I had to go into different like chemical facilities, all sorts of crazy places. And, you know, if you weren't certified to go in there, you know, you didn't go in there.
Yeah, you had no reason to be in there whatsoever.
Yeah, and they were building a fab. This is the fab, the Ocotillo fab in Chandler, Arizona, where they were building the first Pentium processors. And that sort of, it was built specifically for that. And
some of the ones with the floating
crazy. Huh?
Were they like the 60 and the 66 that had the floating pointer? Oh, man,
yeah,
that was embarrassing.
And the ones that would, well, they would also light on fire. That was kept secret. All the ones that they had, that they found problems with, you know, that didn't pass, like, the tests and stuff like that, would stay in-house. And they used ESA computers. And I don't know if you remember those. Each card that you put in there had to have its own file. You couldn't just put an expansion card in there and then turn it on, the computer see it.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And
yeah, freak the hell out and not know how to function.
Yeah, they'd have daughter cards, and they would have a processor on it. It was so you could upgrade the processor and stuff like that, and you know, not be stuck. Well, those things used to catch on fire. I don't know how many times. At least once a week, we had a fire drill because a Pentium processor lit on fire, and there were flames. You know, the monitor was on fire. You know, it was like an explosion. But people don't understand that these big corporations like that, GlaxoSmithKline had the same thing, but it was hidden. You know, those guys walked around. You know, they had guns and Berettas and stuff like that. But it was hidden. You know, you have trade secrets. They have all that stuff worth billions of dollars, man. You know.
Well, yeah, dude, that's exactly why Halliburton was so paranoid about this, like, this one little sign, dude, because they would spare no expense in fighting industrial espionage.
Yeah, listen, dude, I did and configured sign servers for my last job, at least. These signs would display auditing information, you know, because they would, you know, they would audit orders, and they had a whole thing where they would take a day's orders and just run them through an auditor. And, you know, they would beep, 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 beep. And then the sign would display, you know, what they're getting and their bonus. And it was just a bunch of crazy crap. But, well, guys, we got to wrap things up. Thank you, Jason.
Well, it's been a pleasure coming on. I can always use a couple hours to rant.
Yeah, man.
Hello,
hi, Joe.
Today's world, just got to every now and then. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You got to let it out, too, man. We're lucky we have a voice, I guess, where we can run our big fat mouths and get it all out of our system. Hey, that's a cool picture of you, by the way, for Skype. Is that you?
Yeah, that's actually me. That picture's from you can tell from much like the CRT and stuff. That picture's from 2002, but I'm timeless. I never age, so I look precisely the same.
Whatever, man. All right, man. We will see everybody in 2 weeks, and I'm sure Sasha will be upset that she missed tonight's show. And so, but in 2 weeks, we'll have fun. So, good night.
Good for nothing, lazy.
Morning View.